Well, we're looking at Jeremiah. Or not Jeremiah, Jonah. Somehow, every once in a while, I'm thinking about Jonah. I go back to Jeremiah because we spent so many years studying Jeremiah. Jonah's only 4 chapters. Jeremiah is 50 plus, 51 chapters or 52. A lot of chapters. So we're looking at the prophet Jonah. And last week we saw Jonah giving his answer to the questions that were asked to him. You know, they asked him, well, what is your occupation and where do you come from and what country are you from and what people art thou? And he really focused on just who he was. Well, I'm a Hebrew. He didn't go into any details. He didn't talk about, you know, what tribe he was from or, you know, what city he was from, or he didn't talk about the politics of the day because the kingdom was split between the 2 tribes and the 10 tribes. That didn't matter. He went all the way back to Abraham and he said, I'm a Hebrew. Went back to the, you know, the beginning. So he told who he was, and then he told who he worshipped, God, and he told who God was. And he told who God was in a way that they could understand him. He was the God of heaven and he was the God of creation. So he didn't go over their heads and talk in terms that wouldn't mean anything to them. He just talked about God in a way that they would understand. The Apostle Paul did that. I'm so struck by whenever Paul was preaching, depending on who he was speaking to, if it was the Jews, he would talk from the Old Testament scriptures, and if it was the Gentiles, you know, he wouldn't do that. He would talk to them on terms that they would understand and then lead them into deeper truths. So he answered their question. But you don't realize that when we get to verse 10, he told them a lot more. And he must have said something in between, before or after this. Because verse 10 says, then were the men exceedingly afraid and said unto him, why hast thou done this? Done what? How do they know what he's done? Obviously he told them what he has done. For the men knew that he fled from the presence of the Lord because he had told them. So he told them a little bit more than just, I fear the Lord. Maybe when he said, I worship the Lord, he went into detail expounding on the fact that he was a prophet of God. And he really knew the Lord in a very personal way. So we look at the question that they asked here, and the reaction. The first thing we see is the reaction to what he has just said. They were exceedingly afraid, which just means they were terribly afraid or intensely afraid. I mean, so it had to do more with than just he's the God of heaven and earth and he's the God that made the sea and the land. The fact was, Jonah knew God in a very personal way and had obviously talked to him and had a degree of fellowship and communion with him. So now they're exceedingly afraid because they're standing before somebody that they don't quite understand. And their fear is centered around what Jonah did, not so much what he said. It's more about what he did, because why hast thou done this? It's not, why have you said this? It's, why have you done this? So it's not just what he has said, it's really about what he has done. He's told them about his faith, and he's told them about God's power, and he's also told them that he has, as we see at the end of this verse, he's been running away from God. And their fear shows that they have some degree of revelation, because they are afraid of God's power. And they are afraid of judgment, and they are afraid of dying, and they're even probably a little afraid of Jonah. But you have to ask yourself this question: where was Jonah's fear? Shouldn't he have been exceedingly afraid too? Shouldn't there have been that fear on his part? We don't really see that Jonah was afraid or said he was afraid. They were afraid. So their fear shows, number one, they have a glimpse, they've caught a glimpse of who God is and his power and his might and his authority. And their fear also shows that they have some faith. And I thought about two of the Psalms that we're very familiar with. And Psalm 85:9 says, surely his salvation is nigh unto them that fear him. And Psalm 103:11 says at the end of that psalm, great is his mercy toward them that fear him. I was really struck by that, because if you fear the Lord, if you have a measure of faith that fears the Lord, then fear sees that there's that possibility of salvation and possibility of mercy. And that's what they're looking at here, is they want to be delivered. They're in the midst of a crisis, a storm that they cannot find their way out of. This fear means they were just terrified. That just really spoke to my heart. They were terrified. There was this overwhelming dread that they felt, because it's really interesting. Jonah has told them about the power of God. And then they look around them and they can see the power of God. And it's very visible. And so they've already prayed to their gods and haven't gotten any answer. So now they're facing the power of God, the God of creation. I think they're more afraid of Jonah's God than Jonah is. I really do. And Jonah knew God. They didn't even know him and they were afraid of him. Jonah knew God, and I don't think he was still that afraid. So they ask this question. It's a very telling question, because they say, why hast thou done this? Well, what is it that Jonah has done? Jonah has run. What has he done? He has run. And you really see here that they are shocked and amazed that Jonah has done this. Because at the end we find out that Jonah said, I'm fleeing from the presence of the Lord. So why in the world why would you do that? Why would you run from the presence of God? And I think it was the Amplified Bible that translated that, from the presence of God and from being his servant, his prophet. You know, why would you run from that calling and that responsibility? You kind of get the idea that had they been in his place, that they wouldn't have run, even in their ignorance, or even in the way that they viewed their own pagan gods. If their pagan gods had given them a call, or given them instructions, or given them a purpose, they wouldn't have run. Why have you done this? Why would you even do this? Even in our ignorance, we wouldn't do anything like that. So why would you do that? So their question, on one hand, is an accusation. And the Amplified Bible and the Complete Jewish Bible and the American Standard Version translates it, what is this that you have done? What is this that you have done? And their question also demands an explanation. Because the New American Standard says, how could you do this? You know, what is it that you have done, and how could you do this? And we don't really read that Jonah gives them an answer concerning how he could do this or why he did this. He just says, well, this is how you need to solve your problem. Just throw me overboard. He doesn't really explain why he did it or how he did it. He just says, I did it. I ran away from God. He can't answer because I guess you could say he can't justify himself. There's no good explanation that he can give to say, well, this is why I did this, and it was a really good reason. There was no good reason. And so he can't answer because he can't justify himself. What really struck me is that when they make this accusation and when they demand this explanation, it's really personal on their part, because what he has done, why have you done this, has put them at risk. What he has done has put their lives in danger. So they're saying, why have you done this? Why have you put our lives in danger? In a sense, they're caught in the middle between Jonah and God. Jonah's over here, God's over here, and they're stuck in the middle. And God is trying to get to Jonah, trying to reach him. And they're just the innocent bystanders that are suffering the consequences. So on one hand, they're saying, why have you done this? You put our lives at risk, our ship at risk, because you've run away from God. So in a sense, Jonah's disobedience is not just about him anymore. It's not just put his life at risk, it's put their lives at risk. And what really spoke to my heart is that everything we do, or everything that we do not do, has consequences, and others are affected. So what you really see in that question, why have you done this, shows that Jonah probably didn't make that connection or think much about it, and now the Lord is bringing him face to face with the consequences of his actions. Look at whose lives you have affected by what you've chosen to do, running from me. And it's a really good lesson to show that everything we do or don't do can really affect those around us, and they're innocent bystanders. And so they're suffering the consequences. So I thought of two good examples that we could look at in the Bible that shows somebody making a decision, and that decision that they made, which they probably shouldn't have made in the first place, had consequences that affected others around them. They suffered because of that decision that was made. And it's a good reminder in our lives that when you are at a crossroads and the Lord has brought you to a place where he wants you to make a decision and make a choice, and that choice, in a sense, has been clearly made to you by him, that when you turn away from God and turn away from that choice, that there will be consequences, and you're not the only one that's affected. Your family can be affected, or your friends can be affected, or your community can be affected, or your nation can be affected. So one of the examples I wanted to look at is in the 12th chapter of Genesis. And Abraham has been called by God, and he heard that call, and he answered that call, and he picked up everything that he had, and he left. And he took Sarah, his wife, and, you know, Lot, his brother's son, and he crossed over the river of Euphrates. And he headed towards the land that God said would be his. And God made a promise unto him when he asked him to do this. And Abraham, when the Lord spoke to him, built an altar. It says in verse 7, he built an altar. Because the Lord appeared to him there, and he worshipped the Lord, and he believed the Lord, and he left. But you find in verse 9 of Genesis 12, and Abraham journeyed, going on still toward the south. And there was a famine in the land. And Abram went down into Egypt to sojourn there. For the famine was grievous in the land. So here you find Abraham, called Abram here, taking a detour. And why did he take this little detour? Because there was a famine in the land. Now, it's so interesting how that on some big things, crucial things in our lives, we can just have absolute faith and trust in the Lord. And he proves himself to us, and he goes with us every step of the way, and then all of a sudden something else happens, and we don't lay hold of the Lord in that same faith that we did the first time. It happens. And here's this man of God who picked up everything that he left, not knowing where he was going, just where the Lord was leading him. And he takes a step of faith and he steps into the unknown. But all of a sudden there's this famine that discourages him along the way. Now you would think, he would think, okay, if this is the direction the Lord's leading me, the Lord will provide for me. He'll meet my needs. I will trust in him. But he doesn't. It says there was a famine and all he could see what was before him. And so he took this little detour and he went down into Egypt and he was going to stay there for a while until the famine was over. And it got him into trouble. Because it says in verse 11, and it came to pass when he was come near to enter into Egypt, and here again is this lack of faith that he has. He said unto Sarai his wife, behold now, I know that thou art a fair woman to look upon. Well, he probably really was beautiful. Therefore it shall come to pass, when the Egyptians shall see thee, they shall say, this is his wife, and they will kill me, but they will save thee alive. Now how does he know they're going to do that? He's just thinking that they're going to do that. If he is, of course, maybe in the back of his mind he's thinking, well, I'm really not going in the direction that the Lord wanted, and maybe I don't have quite the protection that I should have because I've taken this little detour. So this is what could happen, and so I need to kind of do something to safeguard against it.
Also, and that might have been a practice.
And it probably was a practice. But there again, if you are in the will of God, going in the direction that the Lord wants, and you're walking by faith, and you trust that if you're going in that direction, nothing's going to happen, and the Lord will take care of you. And we find out later on that he worried for nothing, because that wouldn't have happened had he told the truth. So he says to his wife, say, I pray thee, thou art my sister. And, you know, my writing Bible says that's a half-truth, and because Sarah was Abraham's half-sister, in a sense. But my writing Bible said it was a half-truth, so it was a lie, because it wasn't a whole truth. Remember, what were we just studying in Colossians? Was it Colossians? Wasn't it Colossians? Sunday night?
Yeah.
Lie not. Put away lying. And lying doesn't necessarily have to be an obvious out-and-out lie. It can be just a partial truth. Or just the way you say something that makes people believe it really is something else than it is. So he told a half-truth, and my writing Bible says, and that was a lie. So he lies. He's just not going to tell the whole truth. So he says, say that you're my sister, that it may be well with me. That it may be well with who? Me. What about you? That it may be well with me for thy sake, and my soul shall live because of thee. So he's kind of looking out for himself, isn't he? What about her? And it came to pass that when Abram was come into Egypt, the Egyptians beheld the woman that she was very fair. And the princes also of Pharaoh saw her and commended her before Pharaoh. And the woman was taken into Pharaoh's house. And he entreated Abram well for her sake. And he had sheep and oxen and he asses and men servants and maid servants and she asses and camels. And the Lord plagued Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. And Pharaoh called Abram and said, what is this that thou hast done unto me? Why didst thou not tell me that she was thy wife? Who do you think told him that she was married to Abram? I think the Lord did. And he says to him, well, why didn't you just tell me that she was thy wife? Why saidest thou, she is my sister, so I might have taken her to me to wife? And you get the impression that had he just told the truth, he would have honored the fact that she was his wife. Now therefore, behold thy wife, and take her and go thy way. My point being, just like Jonah, others suffered for a decision that he made. He made that decision, and others experienced the consequences of that decision. Could because Pharaoh took her into his house, and he was going to, it looks like, make her one of his wives. And the Lord stopped it. The other example I wanted you to look at was in Judges 15. Looking at Samson. And of course, Samson, he had a lot of incidents in his life. And we find Samson here has been courting a Philistine woman against his parents' sound advice. But he wanted her, and he courted her, and he married her. And of course, there was this riddle that was given at the feast, and nobody could answer the riddle. And his wife kind of coerced him and pestered him, and he told her what the riddle meant. And what did she do? She went and told those at the feast, and so when the time came to answer the riddle, they had the answer. I think that's one of the reasons why we find Samson leaving her for a while and not coming back for a long time. He probably was upset with her because he did have to pay the price that was demanded for the riddle. He just basically, to pay the price, went out and killed a bunch of Philistines and got the garments and everything that he needed to supply what was required and gave it to him. So they paid the price in a way, too. But we find here at the end of chapter 14, it says, but Samson's wife was given to his companion whom he had used, who he used as a friend. And that really struck me because somewhere between the time that they had the wedding and they had the riddle answered, and Samson goes out and, you know, slays all these Philistines to get the garments and everything that he needed to pay the price. It doesn't look like he went back to his wife. Because the next thing that it says is he went up to his father's house afterwards. He didn't go back home to his wife. He went up to his father's house and at the end of verse 19 in chapter 14, and then in verse 20, he must have been up there for a while, because it said, well, they gave his wife to one of his companions. There's another thing. What was he doing with a Philistine companion for a friend? What was he doing with a Philistine wife? He was a judge in Israel. He was dedicated unto God. What was he doing? What was he thinking? So we get to chapter 15, and it said, but it came to pass within a while after, don't know how long it was, but it must have been long enough that the father of his bride thought, well, he's not coming back. He hates her, so I might as well just give her to somebody else. Must have been a long enough time. He didn't send any message and say, well, I'm going to be gone for a day or two or a week or two. I'll be back. Hold the fort. Keep the home fires burning, whatever. But it came to pass within a while after, in the time of the wheat harvest, that Samson visited his wife, and he brought a kid. I think I had written in my Bible, this was probably, you know, around Pentecost, the Feast of Weeks. And he said, I will go to my wife into the chamber, but her father would not suffer him to go. And her father said, I verily thought that thou hadst utterly hated her. When you left, you didn't come back, and you left because you were really upset. Therefore I gave her to thy companion. Is not her younger sister fairer than she? Take her, I pray thee, instead of her. Well, here, marry her younger sister. And Samson said concerning them, now shall I be more blameless than the Philistines, though I do them a displeasure. Now, you don't find anywhere that God really told him to do this. He does get back at the Philistines, but there are consequences to the rest of Judah because of this. And so Samson went and he caught 300 foxes and he took firebrands and he turned tail to tail and put a firebrand in the midst between the two tails. And when he had set the brands on fire, he let them go into the standing corn of the Philistines and burnt up both the shocks and the standing corn and the vineyards and the olives. Well, he started quite a fire. And the Philistines said, "Who hath done this?" You know, it's a little bit like the sailor saying to Jeremiah, "Who has done this? Who's responsible for this?" And they answered. Well, everybody knew, except the Philistines. And they answered, "Samson, the son-in-law of the Timite, because he had taken his wife and given her to his companion." So it's like he has some justification there. "And the Philistines came up and burnt her and her father with fire." So there's somebody that suffers from his consequences. "And then Samson said unto them, though you have done this, yet I will be avenged of you. After that I will cease. And he smote them hip and thigh with a great slaughter. And he went down and dwelt in the top of the rock Etam." Now this is what I wanted you to think about, because here he's doing something that has consequences on his people. "Then the Philistines went up and pitched in Judah and spread themselves in Lehi. And the men of Judah said, why are ye come up against us? And they answered, to bind Samson are we come up, to do to him as he hath done to us. Then 3,000 men of Judah went to the top of the rock Etam and said to Samson, knowest thou not that the Philistines are rulers over us? What is this that thou hast done unto us? So, my point being, all these decisions that he made affected everybody else around him. So when we make a decision, the consequences are far-reaching. Samson's actions affected all of Judah. Why hast thou done this unto us? Not only his wife and his father-in-law. And Pharaoh said to Abram, why have you done this unto me? Why have you done this? So basically, in our lesson in Jonah, they're saying to Jonah, why have you done this to us? We're suffering because of a decision that you have made. Now, I know the Lord used what Samson did and honored and kept him. But still, it's a good lesson to see that when we make a decision, there are consequences. And then we find what they knew. For the men knew that he had fled from the presence of the Lord. And I don't know when he told them that. And I don't know how much they understood of what it meant when he said, I'm fleeing from the presence of the Lord. But I tend to get the idea that they knew it entailed a unique relationship with God and a unique fellowship with God. And it also entailed a unique responsibility that he had. And maybe he explained why he fled. Well, God told me to go down to the city of Nineveh and preach into Nineveh, and I just didn't want to do that, so I fled. We don't know all the details that he said concerning why. But what struck me is all of this is leading up to putting Jonah on the spot where he is finally forced to face what he has done. To admit what he has done. I have fled from the Lord. He had to face the fact that he did this, and he had to admit it. Up until this point in time, you know, he didn't admit it to them. He didn't even admit it to himself, even though he was doing that. And we can do that. We can run away from God and pretend that we're not doing that and really deceive ourselves that, oh, we're really doing this. It's for this reason. You know, you can justify just about anything you want to if you want to go in that direction. And maybe Jonah was really justifying this. And now he finally comes to the point where he's forced to, by their questions and this examination and the storm that's going on around him, to face the fact that, you know, I have fled from the Lord. Now it says he's done this all through this chapter, but this is the first time he's really admitted that he's done it. And it took a lot to get him to say, I fled from the Lord. And I fled from the face of God, or as the Amplified Bible says, from being his prophet and his servant. Because I stood before his face and I communed with him, and he gave me instructions as to what to say and what to do, and I did that. And I don't know how many years Jonah has been a prophet up until this time. I don't know how many prophecies he has said for the Lord. We only have one visible record of it, and it is in Kings, where he did prophesy in the time of Jeroboam the second, and the prophecy came true. But, you know, he's been a prophet for a while, so he knows what the responsibility is. And he knows what that fellowship is like, to feel the presence of the Lord come upon him and the Holy Spirit, you know, rest upon him, and to give him that anointing to speak the word, or that direction and the strength to go and do what he's been asked to do. And he ran away from that. He ran away from that fellowship and that responsibility. And now he's admitting it. And that's what really speaks to my heart, is it takes an awful lot to admit what he's done, and he does it before these Gentiles. But he does admit it. And so you really see the reason for their shock, because it's who he has fled from and why he has fled from the Lord, from that responsibility that he had as his prophet. You're fleeing from the God of heaven, and you're fleeing from the one that made the sea and the land and that has stirred up this storm. You're fleeing from him, and he's called you to do something, and you're denying that and running away from that, and you're fleeing. And so they're really shocked. Why have you done this? How could you do this? How could you put us in this position, in this place? You know, he fled from the God that he worshipped. He fled from his master, the one that he served. He fled from his calling and his responsibility. And I think these pagans understood the importance of that responsibility and that calling that you would have. They would have honored it to their own gods. And here is somebody who knows the true God, and he's running away from it. Brother Philip says, pagans though they were, they knew enough to understand that a person must not, indeed cannot, run away from his God. They knew that. The storm's supernatural dimension, the long suspected and now confirmed by their passenger, increased their terror. Now they really know there's something going on here that is totally out of their control. And they knew this because he told them. He admitted it to them. I think Jonah's conscience forced him to tell the truth. He didn't lie. He didn't soft coat it. He didn't make it sound better than it could have been. He just said, I'm running from the presence of the Lord, because the Lord wants him to admit this, wants him to see this is what you're doing. And that's the first step. When he tells them this, he's really telling himself this too. And once he admits it to them and admits it to himself, that's the real beginning of Jonah's recovery, of Jonah's ability to finally be used by the Lord. He's been humbled in such a way that the Lord can really finally start to speak to him to where he'll really listen. Brother Wiersbe, Warren Wiersbe, says, for us to rebel against God's will, as Jonah did, is to invite the chastening hand of God. Isn't that true? Mm-hmm. And the Lord chastens those that are his sons, those that he loves, but he does correct, because he has that right. We glorify God by enjoying his will. That's how we glorify him. We accept his will over our lives, and we enjoy it. We don't resist it. We don't struggle against it. And we do it from our hearts. You know, the Apostle Paul says in, if I can find it, in Ephesians, Paul says, when we serve, and he's, of course, he's talking, if you're a servant to an earthly master, he says, you serve not with eye service to please men, but as the servants of Christ, doing what? The will of God from the heart. The Lord shows us what his will is, and we do it from the heart. And we don't struggle against it. We don't resist it. We don't chafe at it. We don't run away from it. So So Jonah had, I told him, he was told him, I am a prophet. And he, their next question that we see in the next verse here is not the question for Jonah the man, but the question that they're going to ask is for Jonah the prophet, because they're going to say, what shall we do? And that's not Jonah the man that they're talking to. That's the prophet of God that they're talking to, because I think they have a little bit of fear of Jonah. And yet the Lord uses them, and in a sense they became his mouthpiece. Why did you do this? Why have you put us in this position? And that's the Lord speaking to Jonah through them. So isn't that a practical portion here for our lives?